way they pick TV shows is they make one show. That show's called a pilot. Then they show that one show to the people who pick shows. And on the strength of that one show, they decide if they want to make more shows. Some get chosen and become television programs. Some don't. Become nothing.
Hello and welcome to Drop the Pilot, the podcast dedicated to TV pilots that became nothing. I'm Jimmy.
I'm Alex, and today we'll be talking about The Crystal Cube, which aired on BBC Two on July 7th, 1983.
And I'm Nick. The Crystal Cube starred Stephen Fry, Hugh Laurie, Emma Thompson and Robbie Coltrane.
It was written by Fry and Laurie and directed by John Kilby, who directed loads of British telly in the 70s and 80s, including Heidi High and Alas, Smith and Jones. Any chance I get to mention Heidi High? I'm going to do it.
It's got to be done.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So, what did you guys think of The Crystal Cube? We'll start with Nick. What did you think?
I really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. I wasn't expecting to, but I loved it.
Excellent. Alex?
Same. I was sort of dreading it because I imagined it was going to be awful. But it was brilliant. It was really, really funny. I mean, we were sitting here laughing out loud through it.
Yeah, this is actually possibly the best pilot I've covered on this podcast.
I think it's evidence of the fact that in 1983, the BBC had no idea what it was doing with comedy.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. I mean, even they had The Young Ones at this point, but The Young Ones was classified as, was it light entertainment it was classified as rather than comedy? So, yeah, they had no idea what they were doing. But right, so we're going to go through the plot as much as I can, because, you know, there's not really much of a plot here, but Wikipedia saved the day. It opens with a clip, quote-unquote clip, from the 1961 movie Tomorrow, which is kind of like Logan's Run type movie.
So if you notice in the very first episode of that, the very first scene of that, they've got the guards there, and they've clearly borrowed the uniforms from Blake 7.
Yeah, it's that sort of vibe, although it's in black and white for some reason from 1961.
Yeah.
The mispronouncing words joke, I mean, it's not exactly new, but like saying Bibble instead of Bible, but I just wish they sort of went a little bit further with that gag instead of just using two words. Do you think maybe they could have milked it?
Could have dug another one out, couldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they could. But what they did with Love instead of Love,
yeah, you
know, where Stephen Fry kisses Hugh Laurie to show what Love is, was hilarious.
And Emma Thompson's face during that is just brilliant.
Yeah, so as they part, it parts to reveal Emma Thompson standing just behind them with the most hilarious expression on her face. And that's actually one of the best gags, actually. It's beautifully done.
Yeah, it is.
Which shows, actually, what a well-thought-out, really well-thought-out programme it was.
Yeah, and Emma Thompson was rocking that black wig as well.
Mm.
Yeah, and they really go for that kiss. I'm talking about Emma Thompson and Hugh Laurie. They go for the kiss. They were kind of into it, it looked like. It was quite a passionate kiss they did. But then again, the Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie one, maybe not so much, because, you know, they didn't actually kiss, but I really enjoyed it. After the clip, we meet our host, Jackie Meld, who tells us that the movie was about genetically programmed humans who work for an all-powerful state system, and genetics is the theme of this week's episode of The Crystal Cube, which is a weekly science programme. I think Emma Thompson is quite sort of underrated as a comedy performer.
She absolutely held this show together.
Yeah.
Fry and Laurie, it's really interesting that actually, even that early, they are Fry and Laurie. They're exactly what they will always be. Mm-hmm. But Emma Thompson is so versatile. She plays every role she does so well, and her timing's amazing.
Mm. Yeah, it was really wonderful watching that performance, especially when you compare it to her later series, Thompson.
Yeah.
which was just, I just constantly wanted to
Slap everyone involved,
or vomit, or shout at the TV, or punch anyone within my vicinity.
Find someone who looked really pleased with themselves, follow them home, hammer on their door, shouting at them all night.
Whereas that Emma Thompson was just, she was just really good.
Yeah, I only remember of the TV show Thompson, I only remember the opening credits, where she does this weird interpretive dance.
Awful.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, it's that's the only bit of Thompson most people remember, because it's as if you've seen a car wreck where people have really horribly mutilated before your very eyes. It's difficult to remember that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure she wishes she could.
Yes.
But she's great here, so,
yes.
You know. Oh, no, she's superb in every part she plays. I love the that sort of sob Esther Ransom thing she does.
Oh, yeah.
Jackie is just great. The inflection is absolutely perfect Ransom.
Yeah, that's right. I never actually thought about that, but yeah, it's Esther Ransom.
Yes.
Well, that's perfect, yeah. The guest scientists this week are Dr. Adrian Cowlacey, a practicing clinician at St. Thomas's Hospital in London, and Matt Bellhaven from the Bastard Institute in California.
The Bastard Institute. I love the way they play with names. We get Imperialist College later on.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. The thing is, what they do is sort of actually what the KGB do, which is, it's kind of like a, it's called a hard soft policy. So no, stop laughing. So they're all soft with the, you know, what's his name, Cowlacey from the you know, St. Thomas's. That's all kind of, oh, right, I know where I am with this. And then it's the other bloke from the Bastard Institute. And that really does smack you.
Yeah.
It's like very, so they soften you up. It's all lovely and easy. And then, boom, right in the chops. And that's really cleverly done.
It's exactly like the KGB.
No, that's how the KGB work.
Yeah,
the KGB comedy unit are known. That type of gag.
A lot of people who were interrogated by the KGB in the 80s say that it was very much like a Fry and Laurie gig.
Yes, it's true. Yeah. In fact, Fry and Laurie used the laugh track from the KGB interrogations for their show.
Oh, yeah, they were great laugh tracks. Yeah,
great laugh tracks. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's getting kept in.
Number one.
I think the headline from that, though, is if you listen, if you watch Hugh Laurie through that, It's a really early outing for his house voice.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about the accent, actually. I was kind of thrown off a little bit because he's played two characters in 5 minutes, and both of them have American accents.
Yeah.
It was just kind of because the guy he plays in the Logan's Run type movie was American, and then the guy from the Bastard Institute was also American. I was kind of like, is this supposed to be the same guy? Or, you know, obviously it couldn't be because they were, you know, 20 years apart or whatever, but yeah, I was just kind of thrown off by it.
They came from the same part of America and had exactly the same way of talking.
Yeah, it looked exactly the same, yeah.
That way of talking that is almost exactly not quite American.
Yes.
He was good in House, though.
Yeah. There's no criticism from me there. The man made a fortune from
But the thing with House, though, is it's fine for Americans who don't know who Hugh Laurie is, but for anyone in Britain watching it, you just go, oh, he's doing a voice from one of his sketches out of Fry and Laurie. It doesn't sound like a proper accent. I keep expecting him to go, what ho, Jeeves, at any moment during House, and it does make it difficult to watch.
That would have been hilarious, though, if he did that. And then if Stephen Fry just come on with a tray of tea for him, that would have been quite funny.
That would have been
nice, yeah.
Cowlacey and Bellhaven discussed the prospects of a future where society is split into a genetic caste system with people divided into alphas, betas and gammas based on their genetic backgrounds. They show an example of a genetically engineered human, Gareth Gamma 0001, who is designed to carry out menial tasks without complaint.
Arthur Bostrom.
Yes.
Yes. Good mooning.
Yes, exactly. Brilliant.
There's a few comedy stalwarts in there as well.
That's right.
Roy Heather, who was Sid the cafe owner in Only Fools and Horses, is Gareth's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And what's his name? Paul Shearer. From The Fast Show.
Oh, yeah.
He was, what was his name? Mike.
Was it Mike?
Mike, the other gamma.
Oh, that's right. The non-genetically engineered gamma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bloke from the audience.
I like the gag that Gareth's parents are in the audience and they're actually called Mr. and Mrs. Gamma 0001. That's a good gag, because you think that that's his, like, a given scientific name, but it's his actual surname. I thought that was quite good.
I have to say, as much as I loved seeing Arthur Bostrom and those others there, I thought the second half of the episode was probably slightly weaker first. And the first half gag of ratio. The first half of the episode, where it's basically just Fry and Laurie and Emma Thompson, with the tomorrow, and then Hugh Laurie's brilliant explanation of genetics.
Yeah,
with a palm tree in a desert.
We'll mark that green verdancy, GV. Now imagine there's a traveller coming through the desert. Is it a male? Is it a female? We don't know. So in the interests of neutrality, we'll say that he is neither.
And he does this long explanation and with a flip chart and a pen. And imagine the traveller spies the tree from a distance of 65 metres. And Emma Thompson just puts her hand up and says,
No. I was wondering, what is genetics? I'm sorry, I completely misheard your question.
Yeah, it's a good gag.
First up, all those little sketches between them are really, really funny. Once it goes to the bit with Gareth, I don't know, it feels to me like it sort of unravels a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean,
it gets quite messy.
Before we even get to that, there's the black and white bit about the guy who invented genetics, which has some corking gags in that. He grew up in a working class home, which his parents had built for him in the grounds of their house, and they pull away to this. And that was a really nice gag.
That's Fry and Laurie actually reuse that gag in one of their I think it's series two of A Bit of Fry and Laurie, but they're talking about Hugh Laurie.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. It's funny actually, because now this is tangential. You might know the classic Morecambe and Wise routine with Andre Previn and the piano, where he says he's not playing it he's playing all the right notes but not necessarily in the right order. That routine,
Mr. Preview,
they actually did. That was in their act back in the mid 60s,
right,
early 60s, and they'd done it on TV but with someone else, and it was just didn't quite work as well. But they revamped it for that Christmas show and had Andre Previn. Sorry, Mr. Preview.
Mr. Preview.
Mr. Preview, yeah.
And it really worked. And it's funny. So it just shows sometimes it's worth digging up old gags that maybe never quite worked the way you wanted them to.
Uh-huh.
And repackaging them.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever done that for any of your comedy stuff that you've done? Have you ever reused gags?
I've taken things that I've done in stand-up and worked them into sketches, definitely.
Right. Yeah.
And I've taken sketches that I wrote for TV and reworked them for audio.
Right, brilliant.
Mm.
Good. I've actually listened to your podcast. It's very funny.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's very kind. Do you mean Release the Clown Sketch Comedy Podcast?
Yes, I'm going to link to it on my site as well once this is released, so it's all good.
Yay! Yeah, I mean, I've certainly, in our run of 2 years, there are a couple of sketches which I'd tried previously or not finished previously, and then this gave me the impetus to finish.
Mm-hmm.
So never quite to that point.
Right. So back to the plot. We also get a debate between the Bishop of Horley, the very Reverend Previous Lockhart, and Martin Bealey, an anti-communist journalist who claims the Soviets are using genetics to invade Britain. Robbie Coltrane, everyone!
Yay!
Robbie Coltrane!
Yeah, you're doing a very good English accent. I really like his English accent. It sounds quite natural coming from him.
It's much more natural than Hugh Laurie's American accent.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I love the Bishop. The Bishop is brilliant.
Fred from Coronation Street.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
I knew I recognised him.
Yeah, he's really good. He has some good lines.
That's an ethical question. I think we should leave that to the experts.
I also like the line where he says, where she says, does that surprise you? And he says, no, someone coming up behind me and shouting boo in my ear surprises me. I like that. It's good stuff. It peters out a little bit, especially at the end.
Everything is very messy. And I think they'd... I don't know if they'd run out of ideas or if they'd actually worked out that it wasn't going to be picked up, so they couldn't be bothered.
Things get out of control when Gareth steals the Bishop's Bible, shouts to his mum in the audience and kisses Jackie, then carries her away. Cowlacey is forced to end the show and announces that next week's episode they'll be looking into British theatre and whether it has become an institution for purveying live drama to paying public.
That's a nice last line.
It is, yeah. And the show ends.
One of the things I thought was really interesting was that actually it seems to be almost ahead of its time.
Absolutely, yeah.
The format, that sort of almost mockumentary format, is something that didn't really come back again for quite a few years after that.
Mm-hmm. What year was Spinal Tap done? Was that about
1984? Spinal Tap was 1984.
Yeah, well, that it just shows, you know, that so they're ahead of the greatest mockumentary of them all.
And in terms of British television, when would it be that you see it come back? There must have been something before The Office.
Mockumentary.
The day, I suppose the day-to-day, maybe even Radioactive up to a point.
Actually, I have an answer.
Yes, go on.
Bad News by Comic Strip.
Oh, Bad News. Yeah, of course. Yes, absolutely. Why didn't I think of that?
Because you're an idiot. Yeah.
Yes, I would have fitted in on that tour bus.
Yeah.
Tour minivan.
Bus.
Yeah, because that was the same year as Spinal Tap. It was just a weird coincidence.
They've always been quite furious about the suggestion that they'd ripped off Spinal Tap when actually they haven't at all.
That's interesting, because I mean, in many ways, actually, more Bad News has cleaner gags. I mean, you know, just that's a good gag, that's a good gag, that's a good gag. You know,
the sequel rather than the first Bad News.
I don't know, whichever one. Oh, there are two.
There's two, yeah. There's Bad News, and then there was
More Bad News, yeah.
2 years later.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've actually, you know what, in that case, I've only ever seen More Bad News, fool me. I've never seen Bad News. Wow.
Right. So More Bad News was after Spinal Tap.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Yeah. But Bad News, the first one was the same year as Spinal Tap.
And it is excellent.
But then after that, it probably was like the day-to-day when British television was probably next.
So the closest thing to this is that I can think of is the second series of Look Around You.
Yeah.
They Look Around You, the one with Pete Serafinowicz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, the first one was more sort of, it was like almost like public information.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
With and a voiceover. And the second one was the sort of Tomorrow's World-ish type of thing. And that is very like this.
Mm. Which shows how far ahead of its time it was. Yeah. And the thing about this is it's really obvious the BBC had not the first clue of the brilliance that they had in their hands. And that it took, how long was it, 2 or 3 years before Fry and Laurie got their series?
Yeah.
This is 83, so it would have been 6 years, 1989. But the pilot was 1987.
It's incredible to think.
I mean, obviously they'd done other things in between. So, for example, they'd both been in Blackadder.
Did they do Jeeves and Worcester in the '90s or the late '80s?
Nineties,
yeah.
Weren't they in the interim between the two series of Alfresco when this was?
Yeah. They'd already done the first one and they did this, but it was in the same year.
Mm.
But then Alfresco Series 2 was the following year. But then that didn't get picked up for a third series. So they were just kind of, in 1984, all of them guested on The Young Ones for Bambi.
That is the best episode.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a classic, yeah.
No, that's fighting talk.
It's tough competition. And that's, if you've got something else you want to put up there, I won't argue with it because I will love it.
Okay.
But I think Bambi, as a complete episode, Bambi that works the best.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Bambi, Bambi's the...
Boring.
Boring. Boring is the first one I ever saw.
With what's
the weather like out there? That's only spitting down.
That's disgusting. But yeah.
but it's got that bit with what's his name in the garden? Is it Craig Brown? No.
Arthur
saying
no. Arnold
Brown. Arnold Brown. That's it.
Arnold.
It's got him. So,
and why not?
Yeah, and why not?
That's
And he said, you know, do you know what crime it is that you have been accused of? And he goes, yes. Well, what be that crime? And he said, no, excuse the accent. Being Scottish and Jewish, two racial stereotypes for the price of one, etc. Possibly the best value in the graveyard today, or perhaps not.
Which, incidentally, to go back to something we talked about earlier, is a reheating of an Arnold Brown line from his stand-up routine.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be.
Although Bambi has Vivian getting his head lobbed off by a train. I think kind of, you know...
Talks to Thurgood. Okay, yeah, Bambi is a brilliant episode, and it does have also
Rhys Jones and Mel Smith. Bambi. And
yeah,
Smith.
Exactly.
And Mel Smith, yes.
And it also has Motorhead.
Yes! And Motorhead, yes!
Bambi's the best.
Yes, Bambi is the best. I'm sorry.
Who is the richest man in the world? Oh, it's me, isn't it? No, I'm sorry. Your father's multinational collapsed this morning. You are bankrupt. Oh.
Yeah. See, I couldn't even tell you who the band was in Boring, but I could tell you who it is in Bambi. So
that's a good point. I can't think who's the band in Boring.
Yeah.
Oh, it might be Madness, wasn't it?
No.
No, that was Madness, Series 2.
It was Madness, they go out. They said that Madness are in a pub.
Madness actually did it twice.
Yeah, they did it twice.
Ah,
yeah. So it could be Boring.
I think they did it once in each series, didn't they?
They did, yes. Yeah, because Madness were actually trying to get their own show off the ground.
Oh, really? That's hilarious.
Is there a pilot for that?
Yes, I've done it already.
Oh, I love Madness. Madness.
Yeah. Like,
group who have ever existed, and I will brook no argument about it.
It was written by Ben Elton and... what's his name? Love Actually guy.
Richard Curtis.
Yeah, Richard Curtis. It's written by Ben Elton and Richard Curtis, and it's a 10-minute pilot of basically just sketches starring Madness.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah.
I've got to be honest, as much as I love them, having watched the whole of Take It or Leave It, which is the semi-improvised Madness biographical movie, which is brilliant, but the acting is fairly shaky.
Yeah, or the pilot's terrible. But if you can find it, it's called Madness the Series, and it's only 10 minutes long. It was just like a pitch reel type thing for the BBC, and it didn't get picked up. I was basically them saying to the BBC, hey, look at us, we can act, we can be funny.
Is it Rick says to him, do you know Summer Holiday?
Yeah.
You are it, I'll smash your face in.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, while you two have been reminiscing, I've been on Google and can confirm that the band and song in Boring is House of Fun by Madness.
Hey! Mm.
And according to Wikipedia, the line you just said is in
Boring. So that is Boring. Okay.
Apparently. I don't remember them going out to... No, of course they went to the pub.
They went to the pub because they were bored.
Go to the pub.
And Vivian's mum works there.
Mum works there.
And he hasn't seen her in years. And I love the casual way he just goes, hello, mum.
Oh, you never told us your mother was a barmaid. Well, she wasn't when I knew her. She was a shoplifter. And Neil says she doesn't look strong enough. I don't want to lift shops.
Yeah.
Such a bad gag. But it's brilliantly done.
Yeah, it's the way that it's delivered. It makes it really funny.
Yeah. But going back to the Crystal Cube.
Yes.
The thing is, though, for a pilot, because I'm, made pilots and stuff, and the reason you think, oh, why didn't that pilot get picked up? It's because you didn't get loads of laughs during it.
Right.
Whereas that pilot that they made was very funny.
But the reason it wasn't picked up was because it wasn't what the BBC were expecting.
That's right, yes.
They weren't expecting a Tomorrow's World type show.
But here's the thing that people have to remember. One of my friends was working at the BBC, and he was writing sitcoms for them, and they asked him to do a study on what is the thing that links successful sitcoms. Can you guess what that thing is, Jimmy?
What links successful sitcoms?
Yeah.
Is it me?
No.
Is it me? Oh, wait, no.
I'm sorry,
I'm sorry, I can't think. What is it? You. Let me know.
Failure. All the great sitcoms fail in their first series.
Right.
And a number of them own, like Dad's Army and Are You Being Served? I think the better example might be Are You Being Served? Mm-hmm. Only got shown because there was a strike and they had to find something, anything to fill half an hour of TV time. Mm-hmm. And they ended up getting 15 million views for it. And the other thing was with Are You Being Served? The main comment that came back from the people at the channel was, yeah, it's all right, but you've got to lose the poofter. I lose, what's his name?
John Inman.
John Inman's character, which is is the thing around everything else.
Yeah,
is Hun, which is a classic.
Yeah, and he's not even played as gay really in the show. They don't really mention his sexuality in the program.
No, he's just very camp.
Yeah,
it's a very odd thing, but yeah, I mean, Dad's Army failed as well. So
so did the Young Ones.
Yeah.
Series one of the Young Ones was very low rated.
Blackadder, the first series of the Blackadder.
Well, that's because it's actually in many ways not very good.
Yeah, the first series of Blackadder is great.
There's some brilliant bits in it.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of great episodes, but actually, by and large, there's something just not quite right about it.
Well, what it is that he's the stupid one and Baldrick's the clever one.
Or if you want to go behind the scenes, what it is that Ben Elton's not right.
Yeah, that's what they needed. They needed the street smarts and gags of Ben Elton.
Ben Elton is an unsung hero of comedy writing.
What do you mean unsung hero? He's won loads of awards.
Yeah, for his bloody music.
No. Ben Elton, I think, pound for pound, must rate in the top five. He's one of the great sitcom writers.
Yeah. How does anybody write that much comedy? And the thing is, it was all brilliant.
Yeah. But
he's a volume writer.
And a volume, but good volume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not like you. I mean, you know. Alex is a volume writer. But it's kind of like if you got a multi-volume tome from the Jehovah's Witnesses, you probably wouldn't want to read it.
Ben Elton also wrote Filthy Rich and Cat Flap, so, you know.
I love that show.
Yeah, that was a good show.
Just reining us back towards the Crystal Cube.
Uh-huh.
And you might need to mark this moment and then be able to and then be able to cut it into earlier, if you're sorry. No, so it's in logical order of the thing, because
yeah, I'm not doing that. Just carry on.
Oh, okay.
Mark this moment. It into every record I have, because it will be wonderful. I am special, and I am about to speak.
Well, I'm not going to say anything now.
Oh no, please do.
Yeah, no. What I was going to say is just going back to Woad, the mm-hmm. inventor of genetics, is the scene with Emma Thompson playing the maid or the housekeeper, and he's trying to work out, you know, how cell division works. And she comes in and slightly spills the tea on the slide.
Yeah.
She says, "You wouldn't want to spill that tea on that slide because it might act as a polarization catalyst." And then goes into this
long, detailed,
but done beautifully offhand, and while putting the tea out and, yeah, and polishing a bit of china and
polishing the slide. And then, and then she sort of rounds it off with, "And then we'll be able to unlock the key to genetics, and there then where will we be?" You know,
it's a beautiful comic performance.
It's very good. Yeah, I'm very glad that I actually finally got to watch this one, because it's been on my list for a while. But it's really funny. It's just so good, and I'm sad that it didn't get picked up.
I'm guessing you don't get to say this about many pilots.
No, most of them are garbage.
I think this is an undiscovered classic.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's a real gem.
Oh, it is a gem.
It is, absolutely.
It's shocking that it wasn't picked up.
When you get talented people and you line them all up and they do exactly what it is that they're supposed to do, and it still doesn't get picked up for a show, it makes you throw your hands up.
Hmm.
What's anyone supposed to do?
It's sort of, putting it in football terms, it's as if you had a team with Lionel Messi and all those great players in, and then they beat all the other teams.
Mm-hmm.
But then you went, "You know what? No, we won't do that next season. No, sod that next season. We won't have them. We'll sell all them players." And then you just reboot Love Thy Neighbour or something like that.
I'm a Portsmouth fan. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't like football, so I don't care.
Okay, that bit will end up coming.
Imagine there was a TV comedy program where you had Sky and Laurie.
Oh, right.
And Emma Thompson.
Oh, that's
and Robbie Coltrane.
Wow, yeah. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, and they'd written and performed it, and they'd done everything really well, and it was really funny. And then then you just went, "No, we're not interested in that."
Well, that's
it would be exactly like that.
Yeah, that's unbelievable, though. I don't think that would ever happen.
It couldn't, could it? I know. I'm sorry. I've been ridiculous.
Alex is a fantasist. he's a sort of Walter Mitty character.
I'm a crazy dreamer.
That's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Nick and Alex for joining me.
Thank you.
It's been brilliant fun.
We've enjoyed. Yeah.
Thank you for bringing the Crystal Cube into my life.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really good.
My life to spreading the word of it.
If you want to follow the podcast, it's at Drop the Pilot Pod on the socials. And if you'd like to send an email, it's dropthepilotpod@gmail.com. Where can the listeners find you guys on the internet? You can plug your podcast now, guys.
We are at Podbean.
So www.releasetheclowns.podbean.com.
Something like that, yeah. Or we're on iTunes.
Just Release the Clowns.
Just if you search for Release the Clowns. We're on Spotify.
Yep.
We're on all sorts of places. Or you can just come and find us on Twitter and have a chat at Clowns HQ.
Yep.
There you go.
But your favorite podcast platforms, Stitcher, Spreaker, all kinds.
Or just
all
of them. Just a sketch comedy. And if you don't find us, then the algorithm's wrong.
Yeah, look specifically sketch comedy and you'll find Release the Clowns Sketch Comedy Podcast.
Brilliant. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening and I'll speak to you all next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.